Greetings, my name is Armand Tomasian. I'm the pastor of Faith Free Presbyterian Church here in Greenville, South Carolina. And what you're about to watch or listen to is a discussion that I had with my wife, Melanie. So some background. Some months ago, we had a visiting preacher, remain nameless, and with them, there came when they were preaching, some families join in our church for the services, or at least one service. I think it was the evening. And it was a rather unsettled service in terms of just the noise level in the church caused by an addition of children. And it got a discussion going. I'll just tell you, it started a discussion, basically, around the subject of what's to be expected in relation to children sitting in church and so on. Now, I could go into my background and what I experienced 20 years ago when I was first saved. Basically, church where I was converted, you could hear a pin drop. If a child made a peep, boom, they were gone. And yet today, and especially I think with the rise of what is termed family integrated churches, there has been a shift where a lot more noise is tolerated in public worship. Now, there are pros and cons in what, say, that movement and that discussion has done for the church, and especially America. America has dealt with problems that other countries just don't deal with. The programs, the keeping kids out of church until they're, you know, seven and so on, all of that. I mean, you just... Anyway, not so tempted to get sidetracked. So that's been good, getting children in, families in, worshipping together. But, it's not without some challenges when it's not carefully thought through. So, I asked Melanie if she would help me with this, and I announced this some months ago, and I said I was going to deal with the subject and base a lot of my remarks on my wife's experience, because 13 years, and she has had no help from me. So from as soon as our eldest was born, I already was in the pulpit. And really, she has done this all herself. So if you struggle with this, but there are two of you, then realize that what my wife has dealt with is 13 years, four children, and on her own. And most of those churches never had anything like nurseries for the early years. That's a recent thing in our own church, having that for the first 2 years. So the vast majority of this has been her entirely on her own. With the children and with an infant in her hand and all the rest, just on her own. On her own. So I take my hat off to her. I respect her. I think she has done a fantastic job. And yet, number one, we're not perfect. She acknowledges that. She's not perfect, and she has not done it perfectly. And in the document she gave me, that's how she began. Not perfect. So I feel that very much so. But she does have something to contribute. And we both feel really hesitant regarding this, dealing with this subject, because it's prickly. And you're kind of bringing something to the fore that really you don't want to deal with. You want to let parents just handle these things themselves. But, and we just elected deacons and we turn to Acts 6 and you see this difference that occurred there that could bring a sense of division in the church. And I think where people are, you know, people from the past or people who had an experience in the past, their expectations, and then newer parents who are following a different pattern, I mean, it's just it's partly demographic, experience, you know, background, all of that plays a part. In fact, I just listened to a sermon this morning by Dr. Steve Lawson, and that sermon, he's coming near the end, and there's noise coming from a child, and I can't remember exactly what he said, but it was something like, we need a nursery in this church, which was basically a way of saying that child needs to be out of here so that it's not disrupting the preaching. I mean, it was evident to me that he was getting a point across. And I understand that too, as a preacher. And so I'm just giving a few remarks here, because I feel really sensitive about this in terms of I'd rather not deal with it. But it got to a point, and the discussion a few months ago made me feel I just need to say something, and I need Melanie to give some help. Just Melanie, help us here. Help us. I think she models something worthwhile following. And as you listen, I think you'll feel it too. Now, having watched back the discussion I had with her, a couple of things. Number one, I know Melanie wanted to say something about nursing mothers, and that never came up. And so she was sensitive about that. I don't want anyone thinking that some of the things I said apply to nursing mothers. That's a different phase, a different season. Like, we expect nursing mothers to, you know, as soon as they come in, put their infants in the nursery or whatever. And that was not the case. So if you have specific questions, please ask. Melanie's very approachable and very wise. And just inquire with her. But what came to my mind was also 1 Corinthians 13. And I was reading over it thinking, right, really, in a certain sense, this is about love. Look, how does love look in public worship with different opinions even of what should be tolerated and what should be done, how we handle some of these challenges? And I came to verse 5 and I thought, well, it's right there. I mean, the answer, in a sense, is right there, where it says that love seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked. And I thought, that's the two sides, right? Because really, when you're a parent and you're only thinking about you and your children in public worship, that's not loving, because you're just seeking your own. It's just about you. You and your children, and that's all that matters to you. I'm not saying that's how people think, but there's definitely a danger there where you're not really being considerate of everyone around you. And that's not loving, according to 1 Corinthians 13. The other side of it is not easily provoked. Well, if you're easily frustrated because it isn't dead quiet and there's not this perfect environment, as you might interpret it, well, you're being easily provoked, and it's not loving. So I couldn't really believe just how concisely it's answered right there in 1 Corinthians 13, verse 5. But there are practical aspects, and so that's why we had the discussion, and I hope it's beneficial to you. So I think I've said everything I wanted to say. We'll roll the discussion, and I am sure we don't cover everything, and I'm sure there's stuff that you're going to wish we dealt with. And listen, the time is limited, and I hope it's beneficial. Anyway, with all sense of trepidation, I hope this is a blessing and encouragement to you. All right, so the first aspect that you have here, Melanie, is to practice sitting at home. And basically detailing here that most children need to practice quietly sitting still, and that practice shouldn't begin at church, it should begin in the home. So in what way do we help our children, and in what environment do they get opportunities to practice just sitting like they do at church? but not injured.
Well, one of the main ways that we do that in our home is family worship.
Okay.
And try to do that as a daily practice when we can. And so particularly the youngest, they always sit up on my lap and maybe hold a little book or something, but they're not allowed to get down and walk around while you're doing devotions.
And they sit perfectly. The youngest is always...
No, absolutely not.
So is it common for there to be a struggle when they're young?
Yeah, definitely. And it's challenging, I think, for everybody, all of us. You know, the other children, you, me. There's lots of interruptions, but yes, you have the long-term goal in mind. And so you keep going and keep working at it.
So I'll be sitting with the Bible and talking to the children, and you'll be wrestling with the youngest usually. And sometimes when they're really small, you'll have to get up and walk out and just leave. And that's just part of it. So, but you keep coming back when you can. And of course, because it's a regular thing, over time, they get it. I mean, they eventually. And you have also here that you also practice sitting still, or they get the opportunity to practice sitting still every time you read to them.
Mm.
How often does that happen?
Most days, because, well, we homeschool, so I try to put a very big emphasis on read aloud, and even for the youngest. So I try to, obviously dependent on their age, whether it's appropriate, but try to get the little ones to sit when I'm reading aloud to the older ones, if that's appropriate, and if, you know, they're not being too disruptive. And then each child, obviously, I have a time each day where I read to them and try to make them sit still and not like play with other things and, you know, be distracted.
So most mornings there's reading in the morning, and then there's also reading in the afternoon. You're usually going through something, some read aloud with more aimed at the older children, but everyone's there. That's in the afternoon before lunch.
It depends.
Like,
I guess if somebody's very sleepy, maybe we don't always make that one happen, but it can.
Right. And then the youngest always is read to before bed.
Yeah.
So that...
So multiple occasions throughout the day where they're expected to sit reasonably still. And it's, you know, for a short time period. We're not expecting 30 minutes or whatever, 5 minutes, and start, you know, go from there.
Right. You say here, as you continue to practice, you can have them sit a little longer each time, and eventually they will get the hang of it. So, I mean, I just made my own remarks here about key is daily practice, patience, and persistence. Preacher, always alliterating, but practice, patience, and persistence. That's the key. Have you ever found that they argue about where they get to sit?
Yes.
Okay.
Everybody wants to sit beside mom.
So does that happen at church as well?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. So is that something that can be helped and addressed at home?
Yeah, I guess you have to, you know, let the older ones know where they're supposed to sit. And of course, as they get older, I guess they get pushed out a little bit because they can cope with that. Some of my middle children find that difficult still. So
yeah, I was thinking about this when just reading over these notes, and I thought of something I'd never thought of before. And that is, like, through the week to have them sit in the order they're going to sit in church that Sunday. And maybe rotate it a little. I don't know. But they all know that. Yeah, to be fair or something. I don't know, depending. But, I mean, I don't know if that would work. But that's not something we've done. I just was reading over this. And, I mean, this is... All of this has been every now and again you get a new idea or something you want to try. So, I don't know. That might work for some where they want the urge a more democratic treatment in the family. That might be something to think about. All right. So practice at home. That's basically the first point.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So the second thing that Melanie has for us here is to remind them of expectation. So by this, you're reminding them of their expectation or the expectations you have for them. in church? Yes. Right. So what kind of expectations do you have?
Things like standing with the congregation to sing, opening their Bible, even if they can't read yet. I think it's still a good practice for them to bring their little Bibles and just even look at the, turn the pages, and maybe you have a rule where they're not to draw until the preaching starts, or, you know, try to take notes as they get older. Whatever your rules are, no standing on the pews. I don't know. Things that you just things that you have, you know, decided as a family you want your children to try to follow. I think it's unfair to expect them to remember it week after week, particularly for the younger children. And I do think some personalities need to be reminded more often than others.
Right. So it's your obligation, or the parents' obligation, to do the reminding before, like, so, not expecting them to remember from 1 week to the next. So even before you leave the house or before you get out of the car, you're sort of remember children.
Until the, you know, it's established and they know what they're doing, but particularly as you're starting it out and trying to help them to know what to do.
So why not just let them play on the floor the whole time?
Because we want them to, you know, appreciate something about the worship. We want them to experience it as we are, to observe what we're doing as a family, as a congregation, and join in, even in their innocent way.
Hmm.
I don't know. They need to start somewhere. And
yeah,
there's plenty of other times to play.
Yeah. So most of the churches we've been at where I was traveling around, you were always dealing with the children from infancy.
Mm.
And then when I was ministering in Calgary, again, you were dealing with the children yourself there. But here in Greenville, we have a nursery for 0 to 2, thereabouts. Yeah, roughly 0 to 2 year old. So you're able to have them in. So is that a good thing or a bad thing, or how do you feel about the having the nursery for 0 to 2 year old?
Well, I think it's a good thing now that I've experienced both. I do really appreciate it. Very difficult to get, you know, a 1 year old, of course, to sit quiet. I'm just starting to think about bringing our 2 year old into church, and I know that's going to be very challenging, even at the age she's at. So prior to that, I find it challenging to, you know, just fit in the service and keep them quiet. So it is nice to have that opportunity, I feel, anyway. Right.
So we do believe that our children should be with us in worship. They should experience the adult experience in worship. We believe that.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't think there's much of a loss, and perhaps something to gain with them being kept from that for the first couple of years.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the people are going to be in different places regarding this. But there are practical realities, I think, to it, that God understands practical realities of life. You know, we get to certain, there are stages of life where, you know, we're expected to help. You know, God has, you know, messages to widows and orphans and so on. They're not just expected to take care of themselves. And there are seasons and various experiences where the community can come in and help with various aspects of what it is that we're dealing with. And we do this with other things. And I think that, you know, 0 to 2, they're learning things, but I'm not sure, you know, a lot of what they'd be learning in church is just really the immersion in language and maybe somewhat behavior. But I've never really been convicted that something major is being lost if you only start at around 2. So, and then you're getting help because you're still dealing with a toddler, helping them understand while the little one isn't there. So I know everyone is going to have different opinions there, but we appreciate the nursery, I think, mm-hmm. and especially because it's kept just until around two-ish. Then we want them to move in, and that is a time where we think they can imbibe more, understand more, and start establishing these practices. So why then, even if they're coming in at, you know, 2 and 3, why not just let them, you know, would it not be okay for them just to sit on the floor and do their own thing?
Well, I don't think so.
I think I was thinking about this, and some of the argument might be, well, what do they understand? I mean, especially maybe in a church like ours, some people might feel that the preaching is over their heads. Some might think adults are struggling to grasp some of it. I don't think that, but some might, depending on their background. But I was thinking about how we don't do this with language. Like, we don't change how we talk around the children.
Mm.
We just use adult speech, and they're there. And we know they don't get all of it, but we don't worry about that. We just keep talking anyway, using the language that we use. And no parent has ever been worried in the history of humanity that their children don't understand every word that they're saying. They know they don't understand, but they still know that they pick it up. You know, eventually it all clicks. Context, words, and the meanings of those words, it all begins to settle in with every other context. So when we come to church, I think we have to keep that in mind too, that they are picking things up. And I think when we get them to participate in our expectations, getting them to stand, it's helping them understand that they're included. That this is for them too.
Yeah.
It's not that they're being excluded. So we want them to understand, but we also want to understand ourselves why we're asking them to do this. That it isn't just to prevent embarrassment. I mean, that's not like getting them to be a certain way isn't just to not be embarrassed, because that's plastic and hypocritical, at least it could be. So we don't want them just to behave because that makes us look good. We want them to understand their expectations because they're part of this, and we're getting them to aim at this certain target. And so when they don't meet expectation, are there consequences?
I guess it depends what they've done. But I think we need to be tender and gentle with them.
Okay.
We don't want to make church a chore and something that they don't look forward to. Something that I've always tried to, you know, instill in my children, that church is a day of joy. It's a place of joy. It's a place where we come to worship the Lord. So it's a fine line, I guess, because if they're not acting in the way that we think they should, then I guess there has to be measured consequences.
All right, so if they're struggling to meet expectations, why not just give them an iPad?
Well, it's back to the practice, isn't it? They have to practice. We have to keep being consistent. We have to keep doing the things. You don't get to just go through life with an iPad shoved in front of them.
Right. So I remember, so in Northern Ireland particularly, they will have a cry room. Sometimes I wonder if it's for the moms to cry or for the but they'll have what they call a cry room, which usually, at least in the purpose built sanctuaries or auditoriums, it will really be a room where it's kind of soundproofed, but there's glass across the front of that room where they kind of feel like they're part of the service still, not quite, but you're behind glass, whatever. Mm-hmm. But the sound is, you know, in that room, and you can see everything. And so you don't need a TV screen. You're able to actually see what's happening there. But I remember your frustration sometimes is that you would go into these churches, as I would preach in different congregations, and they would have toys in those rooms. Why was that annoying?
Well, obviously, the children's nature is that when they know there's toys in there, then they want to get into that room. So
right.
there's no incentive to behave in the pew. So just to clarify, though, this is for older children. This is not the babies in the nursery. Like, we have toys in our nursery.
Right.
It's not, we're not talking about that. This is a separate room that was, you know, more for when you're trying to train your children to sit in church.
Right.
So it's different. And I think it would be better if there's, you know, no toys. And
well, because you're incentivizing to leave the main auditorium and go into that room.
Yeah.
And part of what you try to, you know, I think you have to, what I put down here, that the key is to make the alternative to your expectations less appealing.
Mm-hmm.
So however you do that, the alternative to your expectations has to be less appealing. So you're trying, you know, you're trying to get them to be in church and sit and so on and so forth. And the alternative to that is, has to be less appealing to them. Right? So does that mean sometimes there's disciplinary action when the child is old enough to know better and they seem to be being deliberately disobedient to your demands? Yeah. You shouldn't be afraid of that.
Yeah,
you have expectations. And that's the challenge. The parent is, if you ignore, if the child learns that your expectations are negotiable, then they may just decide not to do that ever. And I guess, you know, you're in some ways you're inculcating in them their consequences to disobedience.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the law gospel dynamic that you have in scripture. God gives consequences to our disobedience as well. And yet we're told that as a fat, when he comes with discipline, that's a sign that he loves us, that we're children of his. He won't permit our disobedience going on and on. So we love our children by saying, no, this is not. Tolerate it, and you're deliberately going against what is demanded of you. And perhaps sometimes, you know, you have a slightly older child as well who's causing trouble while you still have a younger one. They know better, but they're causing trouble. So the third matter that you bring up here is to bring special items. So this is where you advise at least something that we've done, and you understand that people have different ideas here. But to bring a few items for church, you have a special bag. Each child has a special bag with their items that's special for Sunday, right?
Yeah.
And they bring them to church. So what kind of things are in this bag that they bring?
Well, for the little ones, it's mostly drawing materials, but very limited because, you know, we all know the temptation to drop that on the floor and be a distraction to everyone in the vicinity. So I try to keep that.
So it's not like 20 different colors or whatever.
Except for when they sneak them. And I don't catch it in time. But generally, I try to limit that. And then maybe a little Bible and sometimes I allow a very small toy for the younger children, but
like one.
Yeah, one thing that's
quiet.
Mm-hmm.
So like a stuffy.
Yeah.
So stuffies are okay.
In our house,
how we have built.
Because I know this is one of the subjects where not everybody wants their kids bringing stuff.
Like felt tips or crayons or pencils.
Oh,
what's ideal?
Things that just don't make a scratchy noise.
Right, whatever. So crayons. Yeah.
Well.
We haven't always used crayons, but crayons are best.
Yeah. For the little ones. I guess as they grow older, they don't like crayons.
Yeah. Well, it's because they have a tendency to sort of
do this kind of thing. They do make a noise.
people do hear it.
Yeah.
You know, people sitting in front of you, it's this irritating sound of a felt tip or
yeah,
a pencil just yeah, gets annoying after a while. So crayons are good. That's at least my opinion. And quiet things.
Yeah.
You do try to encourage quietness, even how they turn pages and that kind of thing. Yeah. So you want to avoid things that make a lot of noise, a lot of rattling.
Fistling.
Yeah. Right.
Crisp lines. No.
Yeah.
That's not good.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So that's, again, optional. This is, it helps with some children. And waiting until certain points of the service. Mm-hmm. Not right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't bring those out right at the beginning.
Well, yeah, I think it's better if they don't. I guess I feel like I haven't been consistent with that 100%, but I think it is.
Yeah, so when the sermon...
Yeah, so that it tides them over until the end of the meeting.
Right, so they get that to kind of look forward to, as it were.
Yeah, and I guess as they get older, then you try to encourage them to note take and maybe draw a picture of the sermon or, you know, depending on...
So our two oldest, they're taking notes. Yes, they're
supposed to be,
Well, they do. I mean, I see it. I see their notes.
Yeah.
Generally, they will take notes of the sermon. But they're copying you doing that as well, aren't they? Which is a tip for you. If you actually want your older children who can begin to take note to model what you want them to do and have at least one of the parent, you know, writing. Mm. And again, you're doing this on your own, and when our littlest comes in, you'll not be able to take notes again. But the pattern's already been established. The older ones already are doing that. So, yeah, you can bring certain items specific. They don't get to bring everything they want. It has to be not noisy and not everything and something that's going to fly all over the ground and cause a total mess. So we'll move on to the fourth matter you bring up here, and coming on the back of talking about not bringing noisy things and so on to church, the fourth point you raise is to model silence. So your point here being that, well, you as a parent, you're modeling silence in church, right? And you want the children to model silence in church. Okay. All right, so you put here that we want to honor the Lord when we come into his house, and so we respect and honor those around us too. This includes siblings, friends, the people in front and behind us, as well as our pastor. What do you mean by that? So, respecting those around, respecting even the pastor.
Well, if we're creating a emotion in our pew, and the others around us are distracted from the word, and they can't worship the Lord, and they can't hear what's being said, and even you've spent a long time preparing your message, and it is distracting sometimes when lots of coming and goings are happening in the church, and we just need to be mindful of one another, I think.
Yeah, it's maybe if you've never been in a teaching. Most people have been in a scenario like this, but certainly as a teacher, when you're speaking and it's in an environment where you expect to be the only person speaking in the room and others are speaking as well, that is distracting. You know, so if I'm downtown preaching in the open air, I don't expect everyone just to be quiet, like listen to me, but in God's house, I think I naturally have an expectation that God is speaking here. So, and a lot of work has gone into it to try and make sure people are brought along logically through the passage. And so if they miss parts or whatever, it can be difficult for them, but also even for me. And I think I do an okay job. Others at times they can't deal with anything, any distraction at all. And I know there have been times where people have said to me, how did you keep focus when that was going on in church? And sometimes, to be honest, this is true. My mind will be on something that's happening in the church, someone talking or some other commotion or something that's happening in church, and words are still coming out of my mouth. And when I come back, I'm not even sure really what I've been saying. I've lost, in a sense, sort of track of where I was going. Now, the words, because it's all in your mind what you want to say. So you can present your argument while still sort of thinking about that thing that's going on over there. But sometimes it's so distracting, you begin to question what it was you just said. So, yeah, it's a challenge.
And I guess we're talking here about all scenarios, not just, we're not honing in on parents here. This is
No, there's different things. I mean, the worst one I ever had was when someone sitting, and this was in the Calgary church, where someone, he'd never been there before, was there for the first time, and his phone rang in the church. You remember? His cell phone went off during the sermon, right, in the middle of the sermon. And he, when that's happened, a number of times where cell phones go off, and so that occurs, but this was different. He answered it. He answered the cell phone, like, hello? And the call and began to have a conversation with whoever was on the other side, telling them that he was in church and so on. And I just went, you remember, I just went totally silent. I just stopped. As soon as he answered the cell phone, I just stopped talking, stopped preaching, went totally quiet. And the only thing people could hear was this man having this conversation. And when I went back and listened to the recording, it felt like an eternity, but it was a whole minute, one whole minute that he was on the phone before I resumed preaching. So that was, anyway, there's all sorts of things that happen, and people getting up and coming towards the preacher, and all sorts of things have occurred at different times. So anyway, but you're saying here, modeling silence, and you say it's important that we use appropriate voices in church by quietly interacting with our children during specific times, such as during singing. So I think your point there is that if we have something to say, there are better times to say it.
If possible.
Right.
You know, depending on what occurs and the timing within the sermon. But yes, I guess within the service, choosing your
time,
your moment to speak, if you can, at an appropriate point.
Right. And maybe something that you want to say to them, you say, reminding them of something. It'd be best to do this after the service, if it's appropriate. So just waiting a lot, which I think is important. A lot of things get said during a service that could totally wait until the end. And, I mean, this isn't just children. This is adults who may have conversation. I've seen this. I've been known to call people out on occasion with it. Generally not in Sunday worship, but I have been known to. And generally these things that are being discussed, they're not that important. And if they have to be communicated, it could be happening after the service. And yet it's happening in and being a distraction to people. So it's completely unnecessary, disrespectful. Yeah. And so, yeah, okay. Let me ask you this. Do you think we can overemphasize silence in church?
I think, yeah, in a certain context. I guess some of the worst or the most challenging silences that I've ever experienced was when the church was like empty of children, no children there. So, no little noises, no happy, you know, voices. And I think that's very sad. And so we need to be careful as a congregation when we hear certain disruptions. We are thankful to the Lord for the families that he has given us, and that we pray for them and offer to help them in some way if possible.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a powerful thing. Shows how easily we can take things for granted. I guess that was one of the benefits of being a student. We traveled around so many churches and had every experience you can imagine in relation to that. And some of them was a sad experience where you, with our children, you're the only one there with little one. And there's There's no other. There's just a bunch of gray head. And do you ever think sometimes that those older people would nearly just rather there weren't children there? That they get to a point where that's actually how they feel?
No, I guess they get comfortable with how things go and they can feel a little, you know, distracted by something that's different, but I wouldn't go as far as what you said.
But I don't know. I mean, only God knows. I mean, I haven't surveyed, you know, a bunch of older people who've been in that environment, but I think it's a scary thing to think that you get so accustomed to a certain environment that you can't adapt to one that actually is the healthy environment. Children being there. Yeah, and of course, the other side of it is, I mean, it does get more challenging as you have more children. So what would you say was, you know, so one, what, two more difficult than one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Three more difficult than two?
Definitely. Yep.
Four more difficult than three?
Yep. We shall see. Number four is going to be the most challenging.
I kind of feel, though, there wasn't that much to deal with the first two. Like, there were things to deal with,
yeah,
but our eldest picked up things quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're just dealing with one.
Yeah.
And she was pretty fast to pick up on things too, but I think there was more work with number two than number one. So, you know, you can't take that into consideration as well. So, and then number three becomes definitely a challenge. We've definitely had way more, like, not even just a step, multiple steps of difficulty increased with the third. Yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, that's been my experience when on the occasions that I get to sit and just knowing the personality of our third one.
Yeah. Personality's huge.
Yeah, way more high energy.
Yeah.
She has far more energy than the other two. She does. Yeah. And so that translates to a more challenging experience for her as well as for us.
Mm-hmm.
And having to tell her and go over things. I mean, she's okay now. Yeah. Mostly.
I think so. I think so.
Mostly, but she's totally different. So there's that too, which I think, you know, we have to keep in mind. And there are on number four. I'm not sure about energy wise, but she seems to be the loudest and the most vocal of all of ours. So we're planning to have fun when number four comes into the church very soon. That'll be an interesting experience, and you all get to witness.
Maybe you'll get to call out from the pulpit.
Yeah,
for the first time.
No, I did that in Calgary. You don't remember?
Yeah, maybe you did.
Yeah, I did. Well, it was a prayer meeting. It wasn't Sunday. It was. I don't think I ever did it on a Sunday, but in a prayer meeting, a little prayer meeting room with about 15 to 20 people, and number two was misbehaving, and you were out with the third. You weren't there. So you were dealing with the small newborn, number three. Number two was sitting at the front, misbehaving, and I had to just speak her name and call her to behave. And she responded immediately. So that's happened once. All right, so it has been your practice, and probably will continue to be, I imagine, to remove an unsettled child from the place of worship, the room where worship is taking place. Why do you do that? Why do you remove the child?
Well, just back to the original point where we want to honour those around us and not be a distraction to them in any way as much as we possibly can. So that's it, really. Trying to help others.
But then you don't get to hear or experience the sermon or whatever.
I guess from experience, I know that comes in seasons, and there definitely is time as a parent where you feel like you don't get a lot from the sermons. Or you could go weeks and weeks where you just really feel like you've struggled with your children. And you do wonder, should I have stayed home today? Maybe that would have been easier. Of course, that's in your weakness, but it isn't easy. And I know that that comes in seasons and then it goes again. And you get to feel like you're really part of the service again.
So you're jogging my mind here and making me think of the fact that there is a danger, because every day you're listening to that, the sound of that child, that you're more desensitized to the sound of that child than everyone else in that space, which could mean that your level of comfort is different than everyone else's level of comfort. In other words, you could be, I can still make out what the preacher's saying and the child isn't distracting me, but everyone else is distracted. Is that possible?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that, but I that's a real thing. Your brain, part of your parental survival is that you begin to kind of be able to tune out the sounds of your children, but others can't because they're not getting that day in and day out. So then you have to be disciplined to recognize your, like, conscientious of your space.
Yeah.
Like, there are people, okay, they have had children, but it was 30 years ago, and they forget that, all the sounds that go along with that. It's very distracting. So, yeah, I was thinking about this more, you know, why is silence important? And so just in addition to your thoughts, I put down a few of my own, that silence is important in worship, first because Christ is speaking as real as if he was right there in person. That's what we believe happens when the Bible's opened and it's faithfully proclaimed, that it's God's word to us. And so Christ is communicating with his church, with his bride, through his word. And when we allow noises, and children especially, but anyone for that matter, to make noise, or even to hold conversation, like, that can happen between adults, never mind between a parent and a child. There'll be communication between two people. And it's like, you would never do that in person. If someone was right there talking to you, I mean, if our children spoke to one another while we were talking to them and communicating something, we'd be disgusted by their boldness and we wouldn't accept that kind of disrespect. And yet that happened, because prophetic ministry, declarative ministry, that is, you know, that form of communication. And you have ways, there are different verbs in the New Testament with regard to preaching. Some was more of a gossiping, that would seem to be more like an evangelism one-to-one, and other words are used are clearly more declarative. Like, I'm coming here as a messenger sent by the king to declare truth to you. I'm not looking for your feedback. I'm just announcing a message. And that's what happens in that moment in our worship. Now, there are other times where we can have discussion and a Q&A, and we've discussed even doing that in a church at some point in the near future. But that moment where God's word is being declared is really for everyone else to be quiet and listen. And it seems to me probably verging on blasphemous, even though it may not be intentionally done so, to talk over the top of God, as it were, as if, you know, what you have to say is more important than what he is saying. So that's the first thing. Christ is speaking. It's as real as if he was there in person. The second thing, man by nature struggles to hear God's word. So you're really struggling. People are really struggling with their own nature to hear what God is saying. And so whispers, pencil noises, paper noises, crying, they add to that inherent struggle we're already all dealing with. So we have to be sympathetic to human nature. Everyone in this room is struggling to hear this as it is, just by virtue of a fallen nature. And we don't want to add to the struggle. And then the third thing is that Satan is persistently trying to steal the seed of the word. And if we don't keep that in mind, that not only is everyone struggling in their own inherent nature, but then they have satanic attack to steal away the seed of the word. It would seem that if we don't allow for that and keep that in mind, that if we talk with one another, if we allow our children to raise their voices or cry, that we're almost in allegiance with Satan. To, like, not intentionally, but that's what ends up happening. He will co-opt what's going on there to achieve his purpose, which is prevent the word from taking root in good ground. So those were three things that came to mind. And of course, at times I may say something, I imagine, and people have questions, or they have maybe something they want to clarify. I imagine that happens. I mean, I'll ask my children specific questions at times. I mean, did you hear this? And, you know, what was I talking about? And prod to see if they picked up on things. So I imagine other parents have things to say too. And yet that discussion about what's being said and what's happening can't happen in the church. It's actually forbidden. 1 Corinthians 14, now the context is different here, but 1 Corinthians 14:35, where it speaks of women that if they will learn anything, let them ask their husbands at home. So that's dealing with women and their involvement in corporate worship. But I think there's a point in the context in which there's a place for back and forth discussion. It's not where worship's going on. And I actually looked up some of the commentaries, and Albert Barnes, he says, if anything has been spoken which they do not understand, so the wife doesn't quite get what is going on and what's being said or preached, or if any particular subject they desire more full information, let them inquire of their husbands in their own dwelling. They may there converse freely, and their inquiries will not be attended with the irregularity and disorder which would occur should they interrupt the order and solemnity of public worship. I mean, and this stands to reason. If everyone was having a dialogue while the preaching was going on, and you had, you know, 250 people or even 100 people, and you paired them all up, like you had pairs, you would have 50 conversations going on in that one place about what's being said. I mean, so what can't be true for the whole can't be true for the one. No? That makes sense. So this is why it's addressed in 1 Corinthians, and why it's important then that what cannot be allowed if everyone was to do it cannot be allowed for one to do it either. So we have to eliminate any thought that, well, it's only just me doing this. Well, you know, yeah, but it's not place for that. So, yeah. What do you think about rewarding positive behavior when it comes to silence?
Good idea.
Yeah?
Yeah, sure.
So how would you reward positive behavior?
Well, I think at the very least, we need to be praising good behavior. That's something I certainly have tried to make an effort to do, because it's very easy as a parent to always be pointing out the negative things that we see. And like I said, we want church to be a happy and positive place for, in the minds of our children, and that adds to it.
Yeah. So thinking through this with you, like reading your thoughts and all, has been really helpful to me, because in some ways I've been left out of this for the last 13 years. Really, I'm not involved. And so my mind isn't on it, because you're mostly dealing with it. Mm. I think you're doing a great job, at least from my, vantage point. It seems like you're doing a great job. So then I'm not thinking about it, but I've been sitting, you know, musing over what you're saying here. And I'm wondering, well, what about setting expectations? So like you begin to sort of encourage the children to sit in and be quiet. So if you can be quiet and meet our expectations of behavior up until pastor, gets to his first point or something, then you'll have achieved, like that would be for reward, right?
Okay, yeah.
And the child can then say, well, look, you know, did I do it? You know, and they can have that. And then, you know, a month later, it could be the second point. And usually I have 3 points, sometimes 2, sometimes 4, 5. Mm. But I would say probably 8 out of 10 of my sermons have 3 points, 3 main points. And so you could measure it that way. And so each month it would be moving. So after about 3 months or so, it would be the whole sermon. But you would have had a whole month of them trying to attain. If they don't succeed, of course, then you keep that goal at the same until they consistently reach that goal of being quiet right up until the second point or something. And then once they're consistently doing that, then you move up to the next level. Well, can you do it to the end of the sermon? Let's see. And have reward for it. I think that would work. Mm-hmm. No?
Yeah.
So, yeah. And just before we move on here, I had a thought. Have you ever been glared at or made feel uncomfortable because of something our kids have done?
Yes. I definitely have. I can think of one very specific time, which I won't detail, but I was very upset. And I think there were tears. And
because
I did feel that it was very unjust. And I'm not being
defensive.
Yeah. I guess if I had felt it was something we did week after week after week, then maybe, you know, obviously the person might have had a reason to point it out, but it was a one-off and it felt very mean.
Yeah. Yeah, so, there were tears that day. I remember those tears. Yeah. Dealing with that. Yeah. But it was all right in the end.
It's okay. I think you just, as a parent, you feel very sensitive to trying and trying and trying every single week. And some weeks are just very difficult. And for somebody to come along and, you know, say certain things, it cut. So, so I'm on the other side of being gentle, I guess, and maybe to a fault. But
yeah, well, like for us, I mean, you're doing this 3 times a week.
Yeah.
That's 150 plus times a year. And so to be like one of those, you know, it seems like it's a little harsh.
Yeah.
So the fifth and final point that Melanie brings up is having a plan, which basically you're saying, like, have an idea before you come to church about, you know, what you're doing, everything from knowing where to sit, being organized when you sit down, and what you do when you go up. So getting out discreetly, trying to sit somewhere where you can get out discreetly, being sensitive to others as you do that. I was reading that wondering, like, how do you know when to come back in again or not?
Well, I think my rule has generally been to try to come back in one time.
Okay.
You know, once you've had a little conversation or whatever is necessary. And then if there's any, you know, noise or whatever after that, immediately to get up and that, you know, I'll only try to come in one time.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's been your rule.
That's been my rule. Yeah.
So you leave for a noise or disruption.
Yeah.
You deal with that issue out there.
Mm-hmm.
You lay out the expectations. You come back in again.
Yes, because, you know, everybody deserves a second chance. So
maybe a third chance before too, I don't know.
Well.
But that has been the way you've dealt with it. If it happens again, out and you stay out.
Yeah.
And you go to one of the ante rooms and you let them do whatever they want in there.
No. Well, I think we've dealt with it already, but just trying to get them to sit, just do basically the same things, but with obviously a little bit less of a stressed environment where if they make a little noise, you know, it's not so bad, but still working on the expectations.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we've come to the end and you have here some remarks basically at the end of what you've put in as be an encourager. What do you mean?
Well, I think I've touched on it a little bit, but just to realize that the parents that you see in the pew are crying and it's wonderful to see them there. And we want to encourage them and we want them there. And I know everybody does anyway, but just to try and encourage them on what they're doing. You know, you could offer to help them, you could pray for them, and just endeavor to reach out to them in a positive way.
Yeah. If possible. Yeah. Yeah, really being encouraging. I think, like we've touched on, the saddest thing is to have no family. And so with families comes family problem and growing pains and everything that comes with that and different expectations, different generations. Things are different today than a different, you know, in the past, and we're dealing with other challenges. Some of it is in the society, but it bleeds into the church. Mm-hmm. So having, you know, screen time and children having screen time, and then all of a sudden they come into church where they don't have that and the stimulation of that. Of course, there are other tips there about limiting that outside, but that's for another discussion. So all that happens in the home plays into what happens at church as well. But even the older ones can slip in how they approach worship too. Because I was thinking about how, you know, we have a prelude for our main services. Music is played, and that actually really is designed to be a communication to everyone that worship's about to begin. And everyone should be calming down and so on. And what everyone should be doing really is going into a posture prayer, preparing themselves. I mean, I remember days where that was common in our churches. But I saw a change. We saw a change over there. I don't know if you can recall, but I can remember distinctly a shift that actually came with a new building. We had an old building and things were done a certain way. They built a new building and it seemed like everything just changed with the new building. Before, everyone was in early, waiting for the pastor to begin. And then there came this new building and lots of people would mingle right up until when the church, the pastor began and announced the first item of praise, and then people would start filtering in then. It was a really odd thing that happened. But even our own church, I find that, you know, the volume levels from everyone can be pretty high as the organ is playing beforehand. That really should be seen as a symbol to go into a frame of prayer. I think about, you know, how we instruct our children right there, the fathers, mothers, like throwing their face in their hands to pray before the service. And other people in the church doing the same, and of course praying for the families in the church. If you see people that are struggling because of the stage of their children or whatever, like, you throw your face in your hands before the service starts and pray. I mean, I maybe it happens, but I imagine there are many, many more people that maybe struggle or whatever, and they aren't preparing their own hearts, never mind praying for the preparation of others as well. It's quite something to go into a place of worship, because it is different. What we're doing on the Lord's Day isn't the same as anything else. The Bible calls it holy convocation. Holy as being distinct, different. It's different from any other convocation, meeting, and assembly. So it's a distinct assembly, and it has a sense of being, well, the opposite in the Bible of the word holy is common. So this is an uncommon assembly. It's completely distinct. We're gathering around to meet with God. And so everything should be done with the kind of spirit of reverence and holy fear. So, yeah, it's a wonderful thing to have children and have our children in church. Neither of us grew up in church like that, at least in places of worship. So in some ways, take our advice with a pinch of salt, because we're all like kind of first generation figuring it out. But you think of it, if you have 15 years with your children coming to church, you know, twice a week. I think that was the way I kind of up. Yeah, if you sit with church 15 years. I can't remember whether I did for three times a week, but it's like 1,560 times you get to sit with them and worship with them. You're going to form their whole character through that experience, hopefully in a positive way. So make sure you take it seriously. I think, you know, to your parents out there, let your children see you. You know, put your face in your hands before the service, praying with God. Let them hear you even saying kind of quiet amens, even louder amens. I'm not opposed to all amens in church, so as the pastor is praying, you know, saying amen, so that your children know, they don't switch off. Dad's following along here as the pastor prays for things. You say amen, the ears prick up. What did they say amen to? What did the pastor just pray that dad is affirming and wants to see come to pass? Those little things all contribute to being transformative and help our children understand. We are to model what we want them to be. And I trust that God will help us more and more. Any closing thoughts, Melanie?
That thumbs up.
That's it. Well, you have been a good sport, because I know how much you crave attention and you love to be in front of a camera. So this has been a great sacrifice, but one I am very thankful for, and trust that it will have been helpful to everyone. So God bless you all. We love you, and trust God will help us all see and experience his grace in raising our children in his house.